Maggio primero 2021. Nos encontramos al mediodía para celebrar el día más importante de una cultura pagana y ancestral. La excusa del día, pues, para recoger flores y realizar nuestras vidas. Para reconectar con la madre, con el agua y con la sangre. Pero también para conocernos más. Para vernos más, para tocarnos, para saber las inquietudes y los sueños. Porque en la intimidad nos acercamos más. Los escrúpulos y las lejanías emocionales y espirituales, eso se va, y contigo se va, y ese día se fue, porque mientras que caminábamos y compartíamos, nos acercábamos más. Caminábamos por una ciudad fantasma, compartiendo sueños y esperanzas. Y tratando de crear una proyección para el futuro en la cual los dos y pues el resto del mundo puedan realizar las cosas que quieren ver, las cosas que quieren hacer. Nos encontramos al final del canal, en una intersección, con muchos carros y un poco industrial. almas bailando por encima, y dándonos cuenta que no sabíamos dónde uno terminaba y el otro empezaba. Y cuando amanecía, comimos ensalada de fruta y goma, y ahí vimos el elixir de la vida, ambrosía, el elixir de la vida, ambrosía.
Sure, you minor. If I like, get some makeup,
maybe.
And we would like to do something. At some point, at this point.
Yeah.
Is it the Apple one? No.
No. But it is. But it's live.
Why is it connected to your laptop?
I don't know. Because that's what the internet is.
Ah, that's really. It's live. Yeah, yeah.
The recording.
Record.
It won't be recorded. Oh, it will be, yeah. No, actually, I can download it from the server. 27 law students from 8 countries gathered to explore what available international mechanism exists that they can. But I brought like a tripod and stuff to like, so I could hold it up.
Climate action. And it was in this moment when the campaign to seek an advisory opinion on climate change from the international. Yeah, so then we cannot talk anymore.
I hope to explain this campaign with an analogy. In the Solomon Islands where I come from, where traditional communities are at crossroads when they're addressing a problem, oftentimes they will seek the advice of the person who is most intelligent and highest. Now, the villagers do not have to abide to the chief's advice, but because his advice is based on his extensive knowledge and experience of past agreements,
traditional customs, general principles and practices of the community. The villagers respect and comply with the chief's advice, and it clarifies their obligations and encourages them to do the right
thing. Maybe I just go in the middle of it.
This is precisely what we hold the ICJ, the great chief of 193 states in view for climate change. Not limited to an advisory opinion on climate change has three main benefits to the climate justice movement. Benefit number one, the ICJ can endorse the best scientific consensus on climate change, removing any doubts on climate denialism and cementing the authority of science in decision making and raising global consciousness. Benefit number two, complementing the Paris Agreement, especially by providing clarity on state obligations in the gaps in ambition, accountability, and fairness. And benefit number three, integrating international human rights law and climate change law to bolster the mandates of human rights bodies to systematically tackle climate change, placing human rights in the center of the climate crisis. Civilization depends on bold, innovative actions. What we must take today, we must attempt every possible course of action that's available to us. In our case, it is time to take the world's biggest problem to the world's highest court. So hopefully, one day, we can look our children in the eyes and say to them that we have exhausted all available tools in our toolbox. We have raised a voice and a fist as high as we could and ensure that they have a green, just, and equitable future. A future where all governments, international institutions, corporations, and private sectors recognize their and uphold their obligations to protect the rights of the current and future generations from the adverse effects of climate change. A future where cooperation between global north and global south countries to address the climate crisis is truly respectful towards the common but differentiated responsibilities. A future where the protection and fulfillment of human rights has no double standards and not meaningful only to the color of white. Finally, I end with a reminder that this climate justice movement, we're playing different roles, we're fighting on different fronts, but we must not forget that we're living in an ecosystem and we are all interconnected.
With the headphones. Can you bring in the headphones?
Aan de University of the Pacific? Is it University of the Pacific? University of South Pacific. 27 rechtenstudenten zitten samen om te kijken wat kunnen we doen. We moeten alles proberen, alle instrumenten die we in huis hebben, alles wat iedereen kan doen. Maar dit was voor hun een hele belangrijke weg. We gaan nu gewoon naar de hoogste orgaan in het recht te kunnen bedenken. Het gaat om rechtvaardigheid, het recht, inderdaad. Het internationaal gerechtshof. What here vlakbij is, and I want to ask you, Solomon, because we're right here in the Netherlands, the ICJ is here as well. What can we do to really make this happen? What is our role, you think, in fighting for your rights as well?
I believe everyone who is here today is already helping.
Mm.
I think this, as I said, we're all working towards the same goal,
And I was talking to my friend today that before, back in the day, even the notion of climate justice didn't came to me. And now I can see many of signs here holding about the whole climate justice. And that is what is reported. We want to live what sort of future are we going to live for children? And it doesn't require one single solution. There are multitude of solutions that we are going to address. And I'm sure many of these people here are taking different sorts of solutions. But we are heading to the same goal, as I said.
Yeah, we're here to support. Yeah, thank you so much.
So as long as you advocate and fight for climate justice, you're already supporting us.
Nice, fantastic. Ze zijn zo kwetsbaar in het geheel. Voor stijgende zeespiegels, erosie, orkanen, verlies van ecosystemen, watervoorraden. Ze staan echt onder druk. En dat is niet alleen relevant in de Pacific, dat is ook voor ons in het Koninkrijk der Nederlanden. Want ik denk, samen weten we het wel. Hoeveel landen is het Koninkrijk der Nederlanden eigenlijk?
Vier.
Hoeveel landen zijn wij?
Vier.
Vier, ja. Dankjewel. Eerste antwoord hebben we. Welke landen zijn dat?
Nederland, Aruba, Curaçao, Sint Maarten.
Nou, welke landen zijn er? Vier landen?
Curaçao, Aruba.
Nederland. Curaçao, heel goed. Goed opgelet. En Sint Maarten, dankjewel. We hebben ze alle vier. Nederland, Aruba, Curaçao en Sint Maarten. We hebben ook het gemeente in Caribisch Nederland. Welke zijn dat? Bonaire, Stasjas en Pistachios en Saba, precies. We hebben een groot deel van het land. Het zijn eilanden, net als in de Pacific, en zijn heel erg kwetsbaar. En weet je, dankzij onze koloniale geschiedenis is dat zo. Maar nu, in het heden, we besteden er vrouwen geen aandacht aan. Er worden vrouwen geen voorzieningen getroffen. Ook het recht helpt hier niet in mee. Op Sint-Eustatius en Saba is nu al niet goed drinkwater. Dus er worden gewoon mensenrechten geschonden in ons eigen koninkrijk. En dat kan niet. Dat kan niet. Eilanden, dankjewel. Ja. En dat is ook een van onze eisen hier. Van sta op, geef een stem en geef steun aan gemeenschappen die het hardst worden getroffen. En die ons nu nodig hebben. Dankjewel. A lot of islands that do not get the attention they deserve in this fight. So thank you for, we're all connected in this fight. Thank you so much. Now. Thank you, Lino.
Politiek, zodat we het ook kunnen aankaarten, dat we voor Saba kunnen vechten, dat we voor alle Nederlandse eilanden ook kunnen vechten. En dat, daarvoor zijn wij ook hier en daarom staan we hier ook. Dus even groot applaus, dit is het. We staan hier met z'n allen, groot applaus voor jezelf. Ik ben zo blij dat jullie hier zijn. Jullie hebben het misschien al op social media gezien en zo, maar bossen die we hebben gemaakt. En we willen heel erg graag binnenkort nog een keer een klimaatmars kunnen organiseren. Zodat we nog meer druk kunnen opvoeren. Zodat we het nog meer kunnen laten leven in onze gemeenschap. Dat we kunnen laten zien dat er een draagvlak is hier in Nederland. Om echt de klimaatrechtvaardigheid in te gaan. En niet alleen maar hier in Nederland, maar uiteindelijk ook gewoon in de wereld. Laten wij een voorbeeld zijn.
be able to see them.
I mean, we probably missed maybe 10% of the people at front.
We could walk ahead on the side.
Yeah.
We could walk yeah.
I don't see any lab coats. Ah, shit.
Yeah, and I think they'll have that big science of silent sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Behind that inflatable object.
Yeah, that's only big, that's stationary. I don't think it's
not part of that.
Yeah. I think yeah. That's actually going wide there, but it doesn't look like that. Nope, I think we missed it.
Highly sighted scientist. Okay, now we've made it next to the XR float.
That man Prigozhin again. Everything from where he is to where he may well be going. Hello, I'm Mark Galliotti. And welcome to my view of Russia in Moscow shadows. This podcast, of varying length, frequency and format, yet always reassuringly low production values, is supported by generous and perspicacious patrons like you, and also by the crisis exercise software company Conductor. So, yes, I'm afraid we're still on Prigozhin. In terms of the way he's still naturally dominating the news cycle, he either is the gift that keeps giving or the annoying fungal infection that just won't clear up. You can take your pick. As a way of handling that, and also simply because I'm committed to do so, what I'm going to do is basically structure this particular podcast around a series of questions that I have been sent at different times by my esteemed oligarchs / hetmen. Reminder, if you are at that top tier of the patron system, you are able to ask me questions at any time, and I do commit to answer them, whether it's in terms of incorporating them into the podcast or answering them directly through the Patreon platform. Anyway, as I said, given that these are the questions that have been exercising my most noble and generous patrons, this is where we'll do. And so, well, let me just start with the obvious thing. Where's Prigozhin? And the honest answer is, well, certainly as of this morning, this is Sunday the 9th of July, we don't really know for sure. It does appear, though, that he is in Russia. I mean, certainly if one believes Lukashenko, which normally is not necessarily a very wise thing to do, given that the Belarusian president is, we could put it generously, a showman, and certainly has at times an only nodding acquaintanceship with the truth. But nonetheless, he probably is right when he says that Prigozhin seems to have travelled to Belarus, but since then travelled back to Russia. He was saying, oh, he could be in Moscow, he could be in St. Petersburg. And I think the implication is, quite frankly, that he is doing the rounds, maintaining his connections perhaps with the Wagner fighters, but also, I think, probably assembling assets and closing businesses down. I will come to his wider Concord Management Group sort of holding company in a moment. So this is the interesting thing. He's in Russia. We don't know where. Indeed, the Russian state claims not to know, with, I think it fair to say, less than entirely conviction. We even had Dmitry Peskov, the presidential spokesman, saying that the Russian state has neither the desire nor the capability to keep tracks on Prigozhin's movements. Now, I mentioned in the last podcast how catastrophically, in my opinion, the FSB really has responded overall to this crisis, as so many others. But if you can honestly tell me that the FSB does not have teams monitoring Prigozhin, his communications, his travels and so forth, then they really are even more catastrophically and shockingly incompetent than I would assume myself. So, look, he's clearly out and about. The implication is therefore that as part of either the actual deal that was struck, which remember we've never really had fully confirmed, we're just simply relying on Peskov himself, which again, as has been demonstrated, is not always the wisest thing. But nonetheless, it seems to be that as part of the deal or as part of the implicit political modus vivendi that has emerged, Putin is willing to give Prigozhin a certain amount of breathing room, presumably with the expectation that in due course he will go to Minsk. It's worth noting, after all, that there was an interview with one of the Wagner field commanders, Anton Elizarov, who goes by the call sign Lotus, who was saying that basically Wagner people had been given leave, because after all they had hard fighting and it's time they had a bit of time to themselves, but that after that then there's all the hard work of essentially re-establishing themselves in Belarus. So there's at least one field commander who's at least willing to claim that that is indeed the plan. So I think exactly, it's the equivalent of Prigozhin being given a bit of leave to get his affairs in order before he heads to Minsk. But that's just a guess of mine, and to be perfectly honest, it very much depends on what Prigozhin does in that time and whether or not the state actually decides to turn against him. Because, of course, Prigozhin is still, I would suggest, in his own way, dangerous. And this leads me to do the second and third questions that I really want to kind of address together. First of all, why on earth does Prigozhin appear to be popular? And secondly, what is going on with the Whigs? Now, I'm sure you know the Whig story, but if not, anyway, I will explain it in a moment. So, Prigozhin's popularity, and this is based primarily on what we saw. We saw, for example, that when Wagner was withdrawing from Rostov-on-Don, there were substantial crowds, no, clearly were not Wagner fighters in civvies, who were there to applaud, and there were people wanting to take selfies with Prigozhin and everything else. Now, putting aside just simply the fact that there will be someone who wants to take a selfie with any vaguely famous person, beyond that, I think it is clear that there is a degree of popularity. But, and I think this is really important, we should appreciate it's not so much for Prigozhin the person. It's not so much people are saying, gosh, an ex-con who managed to parlay a hot dog business into a multi-million pound dollar, whatever, business empire, courtesy of the patronage of the Kremlin, and who sanctions deserters being killed by being sledgehammered in the head, and who thinks that's a fun enough meme that it's worth basically making the sledgehammer your personal symbol. Wow, that sounds like the kind of guy I would want to support. No, it's not so much that. It is rather that, as is always the case, and I think it's particularly the case in non-authentic democracies. Let's put it that way. In other words, a country that on the one hand has the forms of democracy and tells people that they get to choose their national leaders, but on the other hand has that process incredibly managed and limited. People are expecting to find figures